is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I am back with my next guest, Ann Putnam. And the name of her book is I Will Leave You Never. And I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, Ann.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I'm so happy to be here. Today is my publication day, so it's a banner day all around for me. Thanks so much.
It's always exciting when you have a new book out. I'm happy to be talking about this book. A little later on, I want to talk to you about a book that came out last year, The Cuban Quarter Moon. We have a lot to talk about. The new book, I Will Leave You Never, is an interesting book about a subject that, in a way, sometimes difficult to write about, but you've done a wonderful job of writing about a difficult story, but one that I think people will find intriguing. So tell us about the premise for the new book.
The new book is a story about how you learn to live in joy when the sky is falling, how you learn to live in joy rather than fear. How do you go through your life when it just seems like everything that could go wrong actually is? And it's a story of a family with these little children and how they go through their lives with the idea of mortality that no child should really have to face at that particular age. It's also the story of a marriage, of how my couple, Jay and Zoe Penny, how they negotiate living with this astonishing fear. The other thing that's happening is happening in their environment, and that is an arsonist is kind of let loose that is setting fires all around where their house is just next woods. And the Northwest, which is where the book is set, is going through kind of an unseasonable drought. And so they fear that any spark might ignite the wood. And so there's danger from without and danger from within.
Nowadays, unfortunately, I think children are so much more aware of the dangers of life. As a child, I didn't know anything. I'm so blessed. Was completely ignorant. In your story, there's both this physical, where they live, and this arson idea, which is so frightening, and it's something that's real. And then, of course, when somebody has a disease, another horrendous thing to deal with. So it's a delicate balance what you have to do here to write a book that, you know, carries the reader along with you to see both what's going to happen and the growth and how people can handle when things seem overwhelming.
That's right. And I think what I tried to do in the book, which was actually not hard at all, is to bring out the absolute wonderful, crazy laughter that children provide. Something's always happening with children. They're always saying things and doing things that bring laughter and joy and just nuttiness to life. And another thing that's going on at that point of time in the spring is all nature's just sort of going crazy. A bird at dawn crashing into their bedroom window over and over and over again. And, you know, a theory is that the bird is drunk on elderberries or something. And then slugs are coming in the house mysteriously and eating the computer paper and then mysteriously vanishing. And so there's just a lot of pets and a lot of life and a lot of fun that leavens the harder things in the book.
And a lot of dogs.
A lot of dogs. Yes.
You like dogs.
I do. I don't have a dog at the moment, but I have all my life. And yes, the dog in this story gets knocked up, as we might say, by a neighbor dog. And the puppies are born in their bedroom. Jay makes a whelping box. And so they have six little Malamute puppies. So there are plenty of dogs around. Yeah. And that provides a wonderful kind of sense of affirmation of life all around.
It certainly does. And of all the dogs, if I had a dog, that's a dog I would have because they are.
It's a wonderful. I enjoyed writing the dog part so much because that's an extraordinary breed. There's kind of a wildness to a Malamute. They're kind of higher up on the chain, more toward the wolf, and there's just sort of a regal dignity about them. So that was wonderful fun being able to recreate that.
It's nice that you use the word regal, because I had a friend who had a Malamute. His name was Royal. And when he would walk, he would walk through that living room like he was a king. It was absolutely a beautiful dog. But she was a house breezy, but she could afford it. So she was rich. So
great little story in itself.
Exactly. So, and as I said, you know, it's always difficult to deal with illnesses, with pain, with suffering. You write beautifully. Of course, a lot of that comes from the fact that I think you've been studying Hemingway for a lot of your life.
I have.
You are a major Hemingway scholar.
Well, it seems that I have been living a life with Ernest for since I was about 19. Yeah.
Some of his writing, I think, has rubbed off on you.
It has. How could it not, you know? But yeah, my life with Hemingway is kind of embedded in the book that you referenced, Cuban Quarter Moon, which, if we have time, we could talk about that later. But I thought he would turn out to be kind of a teenage crush, because I fell in love with him at 19. But I wound up doing a doctoral dissertation on him, and then going on to be a working scholar, and then taking all these trips to Cuba. With Hemingway colloquiums that were held in Havana, and that led to so many things, including a whole book. So, yes, I go way back and way forward with Hemingway, yeah.
Well, and as you're writing, do you say to yourself, well, what would Hemingway think of this paragraph?
I think occasionally, consciously, and probably subconsciously quite a bit, because, you know, every word has to count, and you can't waste any words. And I think that lesson is a lesson that all writers struggle with forever, because you always want to put down every gorgeous word that occurs to you, and of course you can't, because often less really is more. And so I think that lesson is in there in the hard drive, yes.
Well, of course, he got that from working on a newspaper, where he learned how to write succinctly and quickly, so that he really developed this talent of being able to use every word just right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I also fell in love with him at a young age, because he spent time up in northern Michigan. That's where I'm from, the Upper Peninsula. And so I actually had met people who fished with him, because he came up there for fishing. So when I was a kid, there were still people around who had been fishing with Hemingway.
I want your autograph. Wonderful.
It is. It's so, because he loved it. He loved it there. Of course, northern Michigan, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, is so beautiful, and just his kind of country.
You bet.
But you found the other place that he loved, and that was Cuba, which has taken you, I don't know, you've made a lot of trips there.
I have. Yeah, I think I've made 6 to 8 different trips as a part of staying as a Hemingway colloquium, where American and Cuban scholars got together to kind of exchange papers and ideas. And Cuba broke my heart. I fell in love with it, and then it absolutely broke my heart. And so what was I to do but write a novel about it? And then I kept, you know, started the novel, then I'd go back and have another trip, and other things would happen, and I'd have to add to the novel. And finally, I just said, I've got to stop going to Cuba, because I'll write a 12,000-page novel that no one could ever even lift, let alone read. But it was just so extraordinary. The things that happened, the way I was able to meld my imagination with actual things and people. And I think that was my challenge in I Will Leave You Never, because that is my most autobiographical work. And my challenge was to take the familiar and, you know, as writers do, and move back and make it strange, make it new. And when you do that, it takes time, and then a magical kind of melding of the imagination and autobiography. And what I'd like to use the example of NaCl. Na is sodium, Cl is chloride, and separately they're nothing, but you put Na and Cl together and you get salt. So that's kind of what happened. The people started out being familiar and autobiographical, but they became their whole absolute new self through the imagination. And truly, when I look back at the book and reread it and I'm talking about it, I don't know which events really happened and which ones came out of my imagination. They are all true, and they are all made up at the same time. It's quite magical, and I'm kind of in awe of what happened when I finally finished the book. Yeah.
Well, because it is about a scholar who goes to Cuba and discovers a lot of things. So I can see, you know, how you really are in this book.
Yeah.
Wow. I must say it's a fantastic book. So sometimes things are meant to be that I was so happy that I got this book, the new one, I Will Leave You Never. And it gave me this opportunity to go back and read the Hemingway book, because we're right now in my condo building here. You know, I'm in Clearwater, Florida. And in my condo building, there are two men growing their Hemingway beards.
Of course.
Because they're going to go down in July.
They're going to go down to the Key West
for the contest. Every year they start growing them. They're, you know, getting them all in shape, getting it. And they're going to head down there and hope that they will win the contest.
Yep, that's right. And people want to write like Hemingway, but there's so much more to Hemingway than that masculinity. There's just so much to discover about him. And I think the newer scholarship that's coming out is exploring some of the depths and richness that the earlier scholars missed. And that makes it very exciting, for sure. Yeah. But I think that the two processes of writing I Will Leave You Never and Cuban Quarter Moon, again, a writer always starts with the familiar, even if it's the familiar of dreams or the familiar of imagining, and then something happens to that familiar to make it something altogether new. And I couldn't explain it so much as just point to it and say that it is absolutely magical what happens when you take, you know, you think, okay, I'm going to work with this material, I know this material, and then it is transformed. Almost by magic. It isn't magic. It's hard work. But it feels, when you look back on it, you think, how did I do that? How did I come up with that image or that moment? And I don't know. I just have to say to the universe, thank you.
Well, you've done a wonderful job with the new book, and I think that people will enjoy it very much. Some of it is difficult. The whole process of reading a book is learning and getting into the characters. And as I said, with your characters, really strong characters, and the children are great. And you touch on a subject that I think it's a universal thing of dealing with tragedy. And it's important to discover how people do it. And for that book, I think it's a wonderful thing that today is the release date for I Will Leave You Never. And people can go to your website, which is Ann Putnam Writer. Mm-hmm. Ann Putnam writer. You don't want people just to go to, don't just search for Ann Putnam, or they'll end up with,
and you'll get rich in New England. Yeah.
That's right. Didn't you get it? So of all of Hemingway's drinks, which one is your favorite?
Oh dear, I suppose the mojito. That's kind of, it's kind of ubiquitous in Cuba. So, although I have a ritual every afternoon at 4 o'clock, I have a Cuba Libre with my husband, who also knows Cuba. And this is rum, and it's not any rum; it's Havana Club rum, which is altogether different from Captain Morgan rum. And we'll have a drink and toast Ernest at about 4 o'clock, if you know, weather permitting. We'll go outside and do that. Yeah.
Whoa, that's pretty cool. That's pretty nice. I like that. That's a nice tradition. I'll join you one day.
Oh, please. Please do that.
That would be great. I would like you to come back. Would you come back and talk a little bit about Hedgebrook?
Oh, I would love to. I would love to change my life. Yes. Oh,
exactly. And I've been encouraging authors, now that the pandemic's over, a lot of people who started writing, and they keep asking me, how can I get better? What can I do? What blah? And I keep saying, really, really, it's wonderful to do a retreat. And of course, of all the retreats, I think Hedgebrook is the greatest. So,
thank you. Yes, I would love to come back and talk.
Okay, I will send you a date, and I will have you back here, and we will talk about Hedgebrook, because it's inspiring, and your work is inspiring to people. And they will be inspired to know that you were inspired by Hedgebrook. So it all works out.
Oh, lovely. It's been a marvelous time to talk to you on this really special day for me. So thanks so very much.
And you know, maybe I'm going to have to get myself some rum, Cuban rum, and toast at my fork.
Good luck on the Cuban rum, because you can't get it in the U.S. because it's banned.
Okay. Well, I know people here. You know,
you know, but you're in Florida.
I'm in Florida. I know people.
Swim to Havana.
That's it. Okay. It was great talking to you. Ann Putnam, you're fantastic. And it's Ann Putnam
Thank
Writer.
You.
Please go to proper website. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, wonderful. Oh, I like that. I haven't had a Cuba Libre for years. I forgot about those things. My goodness, nice reminder. And she is a scholar about Hemingway. She's made her whole life about Hemingway. Gets a doctorate in Hemingway, reads everything Hemingway. And, of course, I hope that people think his writing's still relevant. Nowadays, who knows what's going on. Okay, bye-bye.